I saw Rebirth of a Nation about 10 years ago. You know, has the piece changed over the years? What does it mean to you in the, you know, the grand scheme of what you've done?
Sure. Well, let's look at it from the viewpoint of cinema as a kind of vocabulary that over the last 100 years has really transformed in an incredible, I'm talking like just surreal level at this point. So Rebirth of a Nation from 1915 is about 2017. So we've seen 100 years plus of the evolution of how people think of cinema and realism. And I think Birth of a Nation generally is considered to be the first film to really set the tone for how we would, quote-unquote, realistically portray how cinema would affect political aesthetics and so on. So for me, at least, the film really has a deep history with the evolution of media. Nowadays, of course, in the era of fake news and in the era of deeply problematic grip on reality that our media landscape seems to have, I think we can easily see that this is still goes back to the DNA of things.
Right. And what about your piece? What about Rebirth of a Nation? How has that changed for you over the last, like, 10 years or so?
I'd say the tools have evolved. I used to have to carry around a tremendous amount of equipment, dual editing consoles, a lot of monitors and stuff like that, just to make sure the edits were lined up. Now I can do everything from two high-end iPad Pros.
Working with live music, I mean, how much of a score is written out for them and how much of it is... Because you obviously don't have a lot of time when you get back from Germany to get ready for this show.
Sure. I mean, I've done most of the stuff in, you know, pretty much in, as edits that I can easily kind of make sure that it's in synchronous. And... I'm in a remote area in a very quiet town, so I'm getting everything ready this week. I have a big museum show opening. So, yeah, no problem.
Yeah, being at the Kennedy Center must be a must be a good feeling for you.
Well, we've had it play at the Acropolis in Greece, and that's a bit hard to top.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm very much honored to kind of figure how... I mean, the wildest place we had was the Acropolis, and that was really... We had about 5,000 people. Come to that in a beautiful outdoor space. If you've ever been to the Acropolis, mm-hmm. Kennedy Center, for me at least, because I'm from D.C., it's got a legendary status, and I'm really honored to be able to kind of present this. I mean, it's a project, you know, just kind of in a way that imagine if you're a kid and you remember that there's this amazing, like, temple near your house. That's what Kennedy Center is for me. And I grew up near DuPont Circle, so it's got a whole kind of layer of resonance with me as well. Just, I mean, I would go jogging down here, there, and things like that.
Sure. And like I said, I mean, the how different is the piece each time?
Well, the editing changes, small tweaks here and there. The original project, the original version of Birth of a Nation was 3 hours long. And I've edited it down to an hour. So as much as humanly possible, I try to kind of keep things within what I call motif and element. So, for example, a motif is different from an element in that, like, a motif is usually sound. So a composer, like Wagner, will go dun 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 dun, dun, or, you know, or something like that. Or in Star Wars, you'd have the motif of Darth Vader. You know, the Imperial Stormtrooper March. Those are motifs that everybody knows because they're kind of like a specific pattern that everyone remembers from very specific scenes in a film. That's the motif, and then the kind of elements, for me at least, are composing and compositing. When I say composite, I've added all sorts of bits and pieces to the film, and I've switched scenes around, I've changed the way the characters interact with one another, all of which still has, like, I'm thinking of the film as kind of Lego blocks, let's put it that way, where I can make the castle, you know, where I can make it go in many directions simultaneously.
Right. I mean, that's part of the aesthetic of the cut, which you've written about
right.
Before. That obviously still informs your work, but to the same extent, or do you have have you found an element that is essential to your is as essential to your aesthetic as the cut?
Well, at this point, I've been doing the film for almost 10 plus years, so. I have a formula that I can use to create permutations. When I say formula, meaning, okay, at this point in the film, we should be making sure this and this images have already been sequenced and these sounds have already been played, you know. And then, you know, there's all sorts of layers that could go into that. And if you have enough footage, I mean, 3 hours of footage is a lot of footage. So right. If you ask anyone who knows how to edit a video, you can do quite a bit with that kind of material.
And what about subsequent pieces that you've done? Do you keep the same aesthetic of the cut, or are there other aesthetics that you work in?
I haven't radically changed it in a while, just because I think I'm very comfortable with the structure as it stands. And because you have to remember, DJing is about the art of remixing. You're always taking sound fragments of material, and I'm influenced as much by Marcel Duchamp as I am by Grandmaster Flash. Marcel Duchamp, once you get that sync urinal on the wall, you know, that revolutionized art, and he was good to go. He didn't change the sync urinal every time. He just had the same sync urinal. On the other hand, Grandmaster Flash, you know, he'll cut and scratch until he, you know, wants it to sound the way he wants it. So each of those artists has radically different strategies, and I triangulate somewhere between that kind of approach. Like, one is sort of, okay, we have this relatively well-known format of this very famous film, and then if you want to have something that's different, you still need to leave enough intact that people still get the point, you know? Like, if you remix James Brown, but to change it to there's no James Brown left, then you have...
Yeah, no. The point is the ability to identify.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So tell me, I mean, some of your subsequent pieces. I was looking at a few minutes of Sonic Web. Can you tell me how that came about, or how the sounds for that are derived?
Sure. I mean, of all of my projects right now, literally as 2017 is progressing, I was just in Venice with the Venice Biennial, and I was rescoring an early Soviet science fiction film. Called Alita, Queen of Mars. I'm really into silent film as a kind of experimental space for composers to really try and take new approaches. So I've rescored a whole bunch of early Russian silent films just because I'm very intrigued with early revolutionary cinema. And on the other hand, the eerie thing about current projects is that I tend to switch things around. I mean, as we get started better here, every possible angle of a project is what I call iterative, iterative. So say, for example, if you're someone who's watching Fox News versus CNN or NBC or for that matter, reading the Huffington Post, at this point, you're going to be looking at different realities. It might as well be parallel universes, you know, just given the political landscape. I tend to think that we need to really be aware of how a project can navigate the contemporary moment. Remixing Russian science fiction films, or I'm in the middle of also producing, I produced a big project with Library of Congress, a Museum of Modern Art, of five boxes of, or five DVD box set of the history of African American cinema. Did you hear about that one?
No, I don't know that one.
Oh, it won a lot of awards. Okay. We worked with the Library of Congress to do restorative prints of all the first films made by black film directors. And I was also artist in residence at the Metropolitan Museum in New York.
You got to be happy about how things are working out, yeah?
Yeah, life is good. And, you know, I tend to think that, you know, the eerie thing about our current moment is art and music are not as separate as everyone wants to think, mainly because of the web and the internet have radically changed how we think about how we consume media images, you know? Your average kid is growing up looking at music on YouTube and just seeing, you know, an icon or a logo. And they're using YouTube for music discovery at this point. And on the other end of the spectrum, like how we look at art and science and technology, you know, radically changed the way we really think about the aesthetics of our current moment, you know. So everything is connected. And I think if you have an advance in technology, you'll have an advance in how people respond to media and so on.
Well, sure. I mean, that's really how the newest things are created. I mean, the electric guitar changed everything. The electric bass changed everything.
Exactly.
The electric drums changed everything.
Think of turntables, exactly like you were just saying. Yeah, as the electric guitar turns rock and roll, the turntable turns the way we change the way we think of media, you know?
Right. And it's, and you know, being able to incorporate the visual, I mean, this is, you know, the success you've had has to feel like something of a vindication for your vision of this. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that we've had an interesting run of crazy contemporary media, and with this last election, with this current fever that America has at the moment of, you know, political landscape, where we have fictions and fictions of fictions and reality TV as our current political process. you know, I just tend to think that it's gotten more surreal than I could have possibly imagined with my remix of Birth of a Nation.
Right. And I mean, yeah, I mean, you see this happening in daily life, and it's not even just in the music world.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like Rebirth of a Nation is a more important thing for people to see than ever. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And the eerie thing is just how far do we go down the rabbit hole here?
Yeah.
And I tend to think that the media and the way that we think of media, nothing is a fixed format, and everything can be essentially transformative and looking at almost, you know, every possible angle. And I think that's a healthy and good thing. It just is more like we have to be very careful with how you think about arts and culture and so on, you know?
It's true. I mean, you could, you know, this is a very powerful thing that exists and that you've identified. And the thing is, you can use that for good or evil.
Mm-hmm. And, well, people tend to be, you know, if you look at, again, I'm not going to say Fox News, but I also do think that we need to understand that media and how we respond to media, the good news is that everything can be changed. And I firmly believe that we can use media like as a double tool, because some people will use it as a way of creating myopia, dysfunction, and so on. I'd like to think of it as, you know, just it's one more tool in the arsenal of being able to try and transform the way we live to a better place. And it's shocking, I have to admit. I didn't realize it with the 2016 election going on that people have such low media literacy. Like, they can't read between lines. They don't think of how edits would affect the truth of something. People could edit. You could make, you know, Michael Jackson breakdancing on the moon with a Fox News logo. People would think it's real, you know. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
But the remix concept, it really applies to all aspects of contemporary reality itself.
I presume the technology is what made that possible. That and just the number of images that we've cumulatively been exposed to. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, think about it. I mean, technology's got more and more democratized, and even as we can see, some of the most expensive tools on Earth, these NSA hacking software tools that were released into the wild on the internet. The government, you know, the NSA spent hundreds of millions of dollars developing the software. And God knows how some kids or people or some hackers got it and just gave it away for free. And then, you know, it's now the Wild West. I mean, this is definitely going to get deeper and weirder.
Yeah.
And I think of my work as, you know, symbolic.
Yeah, no, I hadn't thought of that. But yeah, I mean, media is far more democratic than it was when you started Rebirth of a Nation.
Well, anybody can start a YouTube channel. And
yeah.
You know, so, I mean, no, YouTube commentary is huge.
Yeah, and you just, yeah, and the ability to make media has greatly changed even since 2004.
Yep. I tend to think that we really need to think that there's an ecology at work. And again, I consider myself an eco-activist, but I also consider myself someone who's respectful of how things evolve. I mean, nothing is locked in place. And the problem with the 20th versus 21st century is that people were looking for this idea of certainty, and it just is not happening. So, to me at least, the beauty of our time is that we've now given up any sense of, like, being locked into one narrative,
right?
Which could be good or bad, but for what it's worth, it's incredibly important.
Okay, well, thanks. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
Yeah. Let's just put it this way. At the end of the day, I think DJing has democratized the world of sound as we know it. Just as you were talking about the electric guitar transform rock, to me the turntable transform media. So all I'm doing is just taking a DJ mix and applying it to cinema.
Right, and that's what it looks like. I mean, I've seen Rebirth of a Nation, and that's definitely what's going on. I think it's a great thing, and I look forward to what you continue to come up with.
Thanks. Okay.
All right, great.
All right.
Well, thanks much.
Hey, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.